Good morning. It is Sunday, May 3rd, 2026, and we're beginning a series called Women Helping Women, based on a video series by Paul Tripp that we'll be watching some videos. We'll be teaching today and next Sunday, and Sally will be taking a few, and Carly will be taking one of these sessions as well. It's a six-session series. I think that we're going to get a lot out of it. Based on just what I've done from the first lesson. So let's begin with prayer. Susan, could I ask you to open our time in prayer, please? So opening discussion, it says here, consider and discuss the following before watching session one. And it says, share with the group your most difficult time of suffering and or trial. I thought, they have no idea who's reading this. No idea. Did you question or feel tempted to question the love of God? Well, I think I'm going to answer no to that question. Seriously, I don't believe that I ever questioned God's love for me. Y'all know that what I went through, and it was 9 years ago yesterday that Doug passed away. And yesterday was one of those days. Everybody's saying, oh, I had such a terrible weekend. You have no idea. I started out 5:30 yesterday morning, getting ready, and I drove from my friend's place in Grosse Pointe Farms, Michigan, to the Detroit Metropolitan Airport, dropped my rental car off, and went to, I didn't have to check, I was already checked in. I just, you know, went straight through security to my gate, and my flight was to leave at 10 o'clock. We boarded, we pushed away from the gate, and then we went back to the gate. And there was a computer issue. They took us off the plane. They delayed the flight till 2, and then it was delayed till 6. And I said, okay, this is not going to work because I got things to do. So I called Audrey at United, and she was on the phone with me for an hour trying to get me rebooked. And after an hour and talking to a few other rude gate agents, not Audrey, on the phone. She was on the phone with me the whole time. But she finally rerouted me through Chicago on a Delta flight. But then Delta, you know, Chicago is a United hub, so every other terminal is. But I ended up in this way back outlier terminal that if you don't know, if you don't Google it, there's this secret passageway that you can take, and there's a bus that takes you to another terminal. But that was a 20 to 30 minute drive through airplanes and SkyChef trucks, and I'm on one side and the planes are taxiing this side. They're taking off and landing on this side, and our little bus is in the middle. I'm the only one on the bus besides the driver and the attendant. So I had to go from Terminal 5 to Terminal 1, two ends of the Chicago airport. If you've ever been to Chicago, it is a huge airport. So I did make it, plenty of time, and then I caught my United flight. My baggage, as I'm getting on the plane in Chicago, it's in Michigan. And this is my little tiny carry-on that they said at the podium as I was boarding my flight at 10 o'clock. They said, we've got a really full flight. We need people to check their bags. Oh. Note to self, no matter how much they beg or plead, do not check your carry-on. So I'm in Chicago. My suitcase is in Michigan. I'm on my way to Raleigh. I get to Raleigh at about 9:30. Nobody's in the baggage office. So I said, all right, I'm going to call. Halfway home, as I'm singing Christus Victor, I've got the air conditioner blasting in my face. I've got Christus Victor blasting on the radio, and I'm singing at the top of my lungs just to try to stay awake. I've got McDonald's ketchup and mustard from my cheeseburger on my mouth. And I get a text from United. We're sorry your baggage is delayed. Here, fill out this form. No. Well, I can't do it. I'm driving. No. So I got home, and I'm filling it out. Submit. I'm sorry. There's something wrong. It's, you know, by now it's midnight. I'm trying to go to bed. You know how, and you know how you've had a day like this and you can't unwind. It takes you forever to unwind. I think I turned my light off at about 1 a.m. So my alarm went off at 6. It sounded like a foghorn because the vibration was louder than the sound on my alarm. So, you know, it startled me awake. And as I was getting ready, I decided I'm going to call United Baggage, see if we can figure this out. And I get the girl on the phone, and she says, well, let's see. It shows that you went through Chicago. I don't see where your suitcase came from Chicago. I said, my suitcase never left Michigan. It actually went on the flight that went at 6 o'clock. That was supposed to be my flight at 10 a.m. It went to Washington. And then in Washington, D.C. Yeah, not Washington State, thankfully. Washington, D.C., and then it went on a flight from Washington to Raleigh and landed in Raleigh at about 11:30 last night. Well, I don't see that. I said, okay. Well, fortunately, I still had the tracking information. I said it was on flight such and such from IED to RDU. It's sitting in Raleigh. And I can tell two ways because, number one, United told me. Number two, the AirTag told me that. Use the AirTags, people. Invest in the AirTags. Her response was, yes, thank you for that information. Well, we got it. She says, let me fill out the claim. So we got it all filled out. It's going to be delivered. Maybe this year? I don't know. You know, you know what? And it's really sad when what you're missing most out of your suitcase is your makeup. I'm in Chicago, and I'm thinking, okay, my suitcase is in Romulus. That's Michigan. It's in Romulus. Okay, I know what I have at home. I put in a Target delivery order. So I had something. I'm sorry, what?
Phone a friend.
Yes, phone a friend. Yeah. I'm here.
Yes. Great.
Thank you. But let me tell you, never have I felt uncomfortable grace. Because on the very last flight from Chicago, I was sitting in seat 8C, which is Economy Plus, and I had talked to the flight attendant because the row over there was empty, and I said, would it be okay if I sat there? Oh, sure. So I sit there. The gate agent comes on the plane and says, I'm looking for Renette. Renette? I already know. That's me. Oh, excuse me. That's me. Why aren't you sitting here? I said, well, I was told I could move. He said, you're supposed to wait till the door closes. Okay, I'm sorry. Would you like to move up to first class? I said, I am so there. 1A. I sat in 1A. I had Coke Zero in a glass. Never has a Coke Zero tasted so good in my life. Oh, you know what? Just that one little blessing from God makes it. It's just the reminder that, you know what? I'm here. I'm in control. I know what I'm doing. Your baggage will get there eventually. It's the least of your problems. And 9 years later, I can still say, you know what? He's there, even with the little daily blessings. That's uncomfortable grace, even though I've had to live this entire time, you know, without my life partner. So, anyway, and I had the privilege of spending the weekend with the couple. Well, the husband was with me when the doctor came in and told me that Doug was not going to make it. And we were actually talking just before I left. Yesterday morning in their home, we were talking about those last few minutes and how grateful I was that he was with me at the time and how they have been such good, faithful, steady friends to me. And I have taken up way too much time already, so yeah, go ahead, let's watch this video. Uncomfortable grace.
You're sitting in the moment of a life mass and you're singing, reading how I love to proclaim it. The last time I was at a women's conference like this was in Northern Ireland. There were 3,500 women there. And I was feeling a bit of an alien. And then I had this thought. The tough thing at conferences like this are the bathrooms. I'm a man. I got 12 bathrooms to myself. Isn't God good? The first break, I headed to the bathroom. I was standing in front of the urinal just getting ready, and the door opened and a voice said, "There's not enough bathrooms for women, we need this one too." There went the one advantage that I had. It is a great privilege to be with you. Think with me. If you right now could ask God one question, what would it be? If you could just get his ear for one moment and ask him one question that you would get an immediate answer to, what would that be? For many people, if they could get away from their fear and get away from their formal theology for a moment and be in a moment where they're really honest about themselves and honest about life and honest about their struggles as a believer, they would say to God, "Do you really care? Do you really care? Oh, I don't mean as an item of theology. Do you care about my marriage that's gone places I never thought my marriage would go? God, where are you? Do you care about this child that I was so glad to receive, but now wants nothing to do with you and nothing to do with me? God, where are you? Do you really care? Do you care that I lost my job 18 months ago because a man 1,000 miles away made some executive decision for the betterment of the company, and we haven't had work for 18 months, and we're sinking down into this hole of financial need, and it seems like nothing will stop us? God, do you really care? Do you care about the fact that my body has been taken over by a disease that makes me feel weak, that haunts me every moment of my day? God, are you there? Do you care? Do you care about that betrayal and a friendship that has ripped my heart apart? Well, I've never faced this with this person. God, do you care? You care about the fact that I'm dealing with weaknesses of old age.
In treatment and fairly early on in his illness, we were attending a church in Berea, Ohio, and the pastor was doing a Romans, kind of a Bible college type class, and I was attending it because I needed something to fill my mind that was something not related to cancer. And one of the themes that Paul explores in Romans is joy in the trial. And Pastor Spink said, "Is there anybody here that really understands what that means?" And I said, "I do. I do now. I could honestly express joy in the trial, because I knew that my Lord and Savior." So at the beginning, when I said, I didn't question God's love for me. I didn't. I think we're all mature enough here, Christians, that we understand that when we're going through things, we don't doubt that God loves us. We know God loves us. But we will ask why. And I did. I asked why. I haven't gotten an answer. Job never got an answer either. But he, you know, he chose to walk by the boat because it was about him, not about me. You know, he chose to for us to go through that because it was about him, not me. And it was about making me more like him. And 10 years later, because it was 10 years ago that he was diagnosed, that, you know, I can say, yeah, I think I'm more like him. I'd like to think I am. And I have grown spiritually. I've grown in a lot of other ways, and I've grown older. But it's, you know, he allows us to go through the trials, not because he's not in control, but because he is in control. And it's for our good. And when people, I was talking with Micah's dad just the other day, as a matter of fact, he was asking me about something, and many times people offer Romans 8:28. When we're going through, you know, the thickest of it. And I remember thinking, I know. I do know. But it's not that it's not a bad reminder. It's just that it goes beyond that. And that's the uncomfortable grace. There are questions here that you can, you know, and he answered the questions. What is God doing? You know, and I did like the way he phrased, you haven't, God will take you where you haven't intended to go in order to produce in you what you couldn't achieve on your own. Uncomfortable grace. Right there. That's my glass from first class with Coke Zero in it. I took a picture of it. I know. But, you know, and it's such a little, you know, it's just a glass of Coke. But at that moment, that was a big deal to me. And so I took a picture. And I asked Carly to set it up there. Because throughout all of it, God was in my mind reminding me, you are a Christian woman and you need to act like a Christian woman, and I'm dealing with a lot of harried gate agents because, you know, there were 100 and some of us on that flight, and, you know, rude people, hours and hours in the airport, you know, transferring from terminals to terminal, and, you know, but right there, that was what brought it all back. You know what? This is where it belongs. He said in review question number three from this passage, how does Christ prove that he esteems the redemption of his disciples more than their comfort? And it's because in light of eternity, redemption is so much more valuable than anything else we can have. And so, you know, our most important lessons, and I've always known this, are the most important lessons that I have learned in my life have been the most difficult ones to go through. They're the ones that have changed me profoundly. So why would God place you in that situation? I still don't know. I still don't know. Many of us here who have lost, we don't know why God did it. But we do have the privilege of experiencing the result of what God has done since. So, for personal reflection, I called this a journal prompt because I know some of you journal. Take some time this week, if you have it, to write, how do I esteem comfort more than redemption in my everyday life? How do I respond when that comfort is removed from my life? And maybe we'll get a guess. Maybe we'll get a glass of Coke Zero in a glass sometime. Yes?
Comment context of women helping women.
Yes.
That we have a responsibility to, if someone else is saying, I don't understand.
Right.
This,
right.
Perhaps to help them see.
Yeah.
How God uses His grace as refinement.
Right. Yes. Thank you, Sally. And Sal, I'm just going to repeat for the microphone. Sally was saying that in the context of helping other women, we can use these times to help other women see that God uses these in our lives to refine us. The three young men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, went through the fire, and they were not burned, but it doesn't say that they didn't experience the heat. That fire was hot because the furnace was most likely a kiln that they used to bake pottery. And if you've ever seen a kiln, those things are heated to thousands of degrees. And they would have incinerated in minutes, not probably seconds, but God preserved them. But the fire was hot. So, thank you. I'm going to leave it there because people are gathering. And unless, I should open up for comments or questions. Does anybody have a comment that they just can't, you need to? Yes, Andrea, go ahead.
What I appreciated most about him saying was mm-hmm. something that struck me was that we're so much about the kingdom here on earth.
Right.
And not our eternal kingdom.
Right.
And that plays into it. So it's so easy to get involved in what's going on with us
right.
in our lives.
Right.
And not really remember the reason that God has us.
Right. It's keeping the end in view. As Rich says, it's living for the line, not the dot. You know, we hear that here at Grace Bible Church all the time. Keep the end in view, and the end for us is eternity. So what we need to do is evaluate, is what I'm doing of eternal value? I got to remember that, especially when I'm dealing with young baggage people that said, I don't see where your suitcase came from Chicago, because it didn't, you know, but yeah.
I might say that all that horrible stuff you went through
yes.
made a great example for us to understand today.
I hope so.
It did.
I hope so. Well, I hope so. And yes, and God is gracious, and His grace is uncomfortable, but His grace is sufficient. Thank you. We'll see you next week.
That was great.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad.